Hey, welcome back, everybody. Episode 2 of Trunez Tech Talk. T3, we're having some fun. This has been a big week for us. It's Friday, the 1st of November. Happy Halloween belated to everybody who celebrates that on the 31st. I don't know if that's universal or not. You did it up in Canada, right, Chris?
We definitely did it up here, although we have to make our costumes fit over the snowsuits most year.
Yeah, you know, problems. It was beautiful here, though. It was like 74 degrees and nice and wonderful. And then it's like a monsoon this morning. So
yeah,
that worked out perfect. But anyway, we're glad to be back. We're here to talk Trunez, talk tech. I guess we should get right into it, though. What was the big thing that happened this week?
Something big happened this week. Do you remember what that was, Chris?
I think so. It was the electric eel launch. The .0, which is the official stable release of electric eel, has launched. That went out Tuesday, I think, noonish Eastern time thereabouts. I was traveling at the time and working
on
it in a hotel
room.
Some of our
more eager users were reaching out and grabbing that ISO before we'd even actually published the notice. I know I saw a bunch of people very much talking about it in Discord going, okay, where's that update file? Millions of F5 keys being mashed around the world waiting for that to drop.
Some of you guys get very eager, which, hey, I'm all for it. It's awesome. I love to see the enthusiasm. But yeah, so it officially went out again sometime in the middle of a day on Tuesday, which is our kind of normal release day. But let's talk about the adoption of it. This has been somewhat of a surreal week. We've been keeping an eye on the usage numbers. We're less than 4 days from launch, and we've already seen about 15,000 systems have been upgraded, and a whole bunch of those are actually new installs. So that's really stinking cool. Not only is that amazing, that's double our previous record on Dragonfish, which was double the record from Cobia originally. So a lot of people, you guys seem to be enjoying it. We're getting a lot of good feedback, seeing a lot of conversations on Reddit, on the forums, on Discord. So please keep it up. We're enjoying the feedback. We like passing that along the engineering team, and we like about hearing the things that aren't working too. So if people are having issues, again, keep that feedback coming, because we'll have a .1 slated before too long, and we'd like to get as many fixes in there as we can. Any impressions you want to offer? Anything you've seen, Chris?
Definitely Docker is one of the huge things that people are really a big fan of. I don't know how many posts I've seen where people talk about the reduction in CPU usage, the reduction in overall power consumption. For those who are measuring that, like they've got an inline power monitor with that, they're saying, I'm actually shaving, you know, whether it's 15, 20 watts off these, some of the more powerful systems. They're saying, I'm measurably getting power savings out of upgrading to electric eel on this. Lots of kudos for the engineering and the apps team there for the undertaking of migrating from Kubernetes to Docker at all. They're saying, like, this was no light undertaking. So it was definitely a pretty heavy lift and shift. I know I saw a lot of conversations internally about the impacts of it and the amount of effort you guys put in. So just passing on all the kudos from the community. They really enjoy it.
Well, on behalf of the engineering team, we appreciate that. And that is true. That was a lot of extra effort went into making that possible to migrate all 100 plus apps that were in the official Trunez catalog over to Docker. Most things have gone seamlessly. If people find issues, of course, we're happy to address them. And the beautiful thing is a lot of the migration issues can be resolved by pushing an update to the app repository itself. There's no Trunez scale software update required. So if you have a problem, if something doesn't migrate, report it. We may get a fix out to you usually in 24 to 48 hours, and then you can rerun the migration and move on. But again, those number of bugs seem to be dwindling, and a lot of people's apps are just moving over. And when do you get a software update that saves you money? I mean, when you're talking that kind of wattage all year, I mean, save you a few bucks. So that's cool.
It's not trivial. And some people are actually even saying, you know, it's they run their systems on solar power. We have a few very inventive people who are running them in kind of an off-grid scenario. And they said, hey, this makes a measurable impact on me.
That's really cool. Man, you guys, if you're doing something cool like that, you almost need to send pictures, do a little write-up of it and post it on the forums. That's something like we'll discuss here on the show, because
absolutely,
I love hearing about weird and interesting and creative ways people run their storage and the kind of homebrew rigs they build. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And look, we're all geeks here. We're all nerds. We enjoy this. This is the kind of stuff I read for fun. So please share if you're doing something creative and interesting. Like, we'd love to talk about it, and we'll probably highlight it on a future episode. But other impressions, people are enjoying the new widgets, the new dashboard, the improvements there. That's definitely nice. We should probably talk about RAID-Z expansion, which is the other big feature. But before we do, one quick shout out, of course, the new ZFS version under the hood is important. We're seeing a lot of performance improvements that came with that as well. And I don't know if anyone's really dug in at the higher end of things to to see those gains yet or not, but they're definitely there. We're seeing them in our testing. So good luck with your testing and rollout in the future, everyone who's adopted.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see the social media speed racers back at it again pretty quickly. I know we had a quite a collection of them that were racing all of their SSDs for the best log device. So I'm sure we'll get a bunch of people going, okay, let's have another simulated bake-off here, and who's got the most NVMe we can throw at this? Let's get the big numbers out there.
Yeah,
the drag racing, the digital drag racing, always exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we love to see those. So publish what you got. Share. It's fun. That's part of being open source here, is being able to talk about these things. But the other big killer feature people have been waiting for years for is the RAID Z expansion, where you can basically grow a VDEV one drive at a time. But with that, that spawned a lot of conversation about free reporting and how we do some of that in the GUI, and actually ZFS does it on the back end. And Chris, I think we had, what, a 20-page thread discussing that not too long ago?
I don't know. We're well over 100 replies. I got to say, we're probably close to 200. I have to go back and check on the thread again this morning if it's not already over that mark. It's threatening the meme thread for one of the longest on the forums. So there was definitely a lot of discussion going on.
Can you give us like a 5-minute version of that so somebody doesn't have to read all those pages?
To give you the TLDR on it, is that anybody who is using the RAID Z expansion feature has probably noticed a discrepancy in what ZFS is reporting the total free space available on your volume is. You say, hey, I added a new 16 terabyte drive. How come it says I only got 10 terabytes more space? The challenge is with the space accounting in RAID Z. OpenZFS was originally never intended to have a VDEV change its width, especially when we're talking about data and parity and ratios like that. So if you started with something like a 3-wide Z1, it was making its free space estimates based on, okay, you can write 3 blocks of data and 1 block of parity. Well, now you've grown it to a 4-wide Z, or sorry, that was a 4-wide Z1 originally, I think.
I might 3-wide Z1's where you started. We're growing
3-wide Z1. So 3-wide Z1 would be 2 data, 1 parity. Now, if you've gone to 4-wide, you now have 3 data and 1 parity. So it's still going to be doing that free space math based on the original VDEV width. And this is something that we're trying to address sort of upstream with the OpenZFS developers to do accurate space accounting on it. The challenge is, well, ZFS certainly knows how wide each particular record is when it goes to read it from the disks. If you had to ask it to go back and read every single record just to give you an accurate count of free space, it's going to take an awful lot of time to do that for every single job. So what it's attempting to do is give you an overall estimation of the free space. Now, you do have all of that available free space. So when you added your 16 terabytes, you have roughly that 16 terabytes of usable space because you haven't changed your parity level. You haven't turned it from a Z1 into a Z2. That isn't possible at this point. So you do have all that free space. It's just some of the reporting may not be 100% accurate at this time. Your used space will be accurate, but it's the free space that's going to be challenging. Of course, things like the data reduction features, whether you're using compression or you're using deduplication, and again, side note, our fast dedupe is still considered experimental at this point, but especially if you're using compression, and for most people you should be, you will probably continue to see a little bits of oddities from there where you go, well, even though I'm adding up my used and my free, it's somehow greater than my total. We're doing our best to give you, you know, extra free space in terms of free as in available capacity and free as in you didn't have to pay for it because compression's saving you money there.
Yeah.
But it is kind of challenging. We realize that it's confusing for people. So we're doing our best to see if we can get some more clarity on the issue. It's probably going to require a little bit of engineering tooling on the back end, but we want you to know that you haven't lost any free space. We're not reserving it. There's no bug in that in terms of that growth. It's a reporting issue right now. By all means, continue to grow your VDEVs. Although understand that especially growing a VDEV with RAID Z, it does take a fair bit of time. You'll want to make sure that you're able to monitor that process. For larger drives, especially if you've very much filled your VDEV, I believe somebody had let theirs grow to about 98% full before adding that next disk. It's going to take time. I think that person was on for about 3 days before they said it finished relocating all of their data because they had, I think it was something about on the order of 60 terabytes to rebalance.
Oh, geez, okay. Yeah, well, definitely. This is something we're going to keep an eye on and work with upstream on. And of course, when the fixes land there, we'll merge them back and get them into a release of TrueNAS in the near future. And you didn't even throw in block cloning too. Never mind, you got compression. Now you got block cloning. For those who don't know, that's kind of like inline deduplication. That works in conjunction with compression, of course. But what's interesting about that is it got turned on in Dragonfish by default. And some people are still just discovering it, which is pretty cool. It means basically if you make a copy of a file from one data set to another, or like an SMB share to another, it's actually not making a physical copy of the data. It's just creating pointers and saying those blocks are reserved now. It's deduping that in effect. I think I saw something amusing on the forums where somebody did a copy and paste over SMB. And they're like, I'm only connected at 1 gigabit, but it's Windows is showing like what? I'm getting 100 gigabit file copy speeds. How is that possible? Well, that was the block cloning working in the background. It wasn't actually sending that out over the wire. It was just doing the manipulation on the TrueNAS side. So very cool features, all designed to help make your system more efficient, save you space, but it does make the free space accounting very much a nightmare. So
definitely, bear with us. Definitely. Yeah. On the subject of block cloning real quick is that I saw somebody doing interesting things with sort of client-side deduplication in a sense. They're saying, well, I have, I think there was like fdupes and jdupes as packages where you say, you know, you can compare the hashes on the client side. If they're identical in point A and point B, they were actually removing the file from the second location, recopying it, and they saved the entire space on the back end through block clone over SMB. So just more things that you can get as flexible options of, you know, space savings, even transparently. And again, because it's coming in to you as a free update, it's free space. It's free real estate.
Absolutely. So please use, and we'd love to hear your success. And if you have issues, we'd love to hear that too. And the best place usually is, of course, the forums. That's where a lot of the community happens around TrueNAS. So we should talk about that a little bit here. We wanted to mention a little bit about the forums. So first of all, if you're not on the TrueNAS forums already, maybe you were years ago. It's quite a bit nicer place these days. It's got modern. It's a lot of good people on there discussing a lot of things, TrueNAS and other. But one of the cool things we rolled out in the last couple months was the feature request section of the forums. We never really had a good system for taking feature requests from the community. We tried it in Jira for a while, and Jira, how do you say something nice? Anyway, I won't say something about it.
But we'll say it wasn't optimal. People didn't enjoy the additional friction of having to sign up for a Jira account. That was one of the major things that I heard was people saying, well, I've already signed up for your forums, and now I have to sign up somewhere else to give you a feature request. Why can't I just do that here? And now you can, because there's a dedicated section on the forums for feature requests. So Chris, why don't you go and talk about that, on how engineering uses that to sort of triage and filter things through?
Sure. Again, so there's a feature request section in the forums. You'll see it as a category, and you can go browse existing feature requests that people have proposed. And then you can also cast votes. So what's really cool about this is every user of the forums has a certain amount of votes that they're able to cast to indicate their support for any number of features. Those are actually based on your forum seniority. So the software we use, Discourse for the forums, has this concept known as trust levels. So when you first join the forums, you're a trust level 0. You get 2 votes that you can cast. But as you use the forums a little more and get more involved, you know, do some replies, have some conversations, you start moving up the tree. You go to trust level 1, 2, 3. Eventually, you can make it all the way to 4. And your number of votes goes up with those trust levels accordingly. So you go from 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 to eventually 10. And the way that works is you can either go create a post in the feature request forums, which is just a normal post, just like you would do on the forums. And you'd put your reasons for why you want the feature. What are the benefits? I think there's a template there that'll guide you through some of the common things that you want.
We do have a template there.
Yeah. It'll help guide you through that. So yeah, fill that out and basically make a case. What you want to do is you want to make a case so we as developers know what you're asking for, why you want it, what's the use case. That gives us an idea of the difficulty in implementing it, how we test it, all that good stuff. But you're also making the case for other users to go and vote as well and say, that sounds interesting. I see benefit in that. Me too. And they cast a vote. And one thing we should mention is the way the voting works is, of course, when you've cast your 2 votes, you're not able to cast any more. If you want to go vote for a different thing, you got to remove a vote and then vote on the new item until we close the feature. And by closing, what we mean is we will review these periodically. Every 6 months, we officially review them and then go through and do kind of a big, you know, accepting or rejecting of different features for different reasons. And we'll update why on each. But at the moment of closing, those votes are automatically released. So it'll still show the vote count for historical reasons, but you don't have to go remove your vote from those closed items anymore. You're now available to go and vote on a new item. But you know, sometimes we do things out of band too. We've had a couple things where people have suggested small features and it's like, oh, that's super simple. Yeah, we could absolutely go do that and make a few tweaks here and there and we'll just accept it and move on. So
it's by all means, not necessarily purely based on vote count. So it's not like an automated, there's no AI bot scraping through and finding, you know, okay, highest vote goes over here. It's a balance of, you know, the popularity and the effort behind it.
Yes.
You know, purely in a self-serving sense, you know, I put in a feature request for, hey, can we get Intel GPU top so I can monitor whether or not my new ARC card is working properly? You know, it was a fairly small lift, but we did have a lot of other users at the time saying, hey, I've got one of those cards. They're great for video decode. So they threw some votes behind it. And it turns out, Chris, it looked like it was pretty easy to implement because that showed up relatively quickly in the Electric Eel betas.
Absolutely. It was simple. So again, we're going to weigh it versus the complexity of implementation, plus also sometimes the risk, because some features introduce risk to other features, right? Not everything is equal. There's going to be some features that could have 100 votes, but at the same time, it could fundamentally break certain things in the system. So we're going to have to be very careful before we accept and move forward on something like that versus another item, which maybe has a smaller number of votes, but is trivial, impacts nobody, and easy to get in. So again, we're going to weigh everything appropriately. Real humans do that. We take a look at it on the IX side and again, monitor that pretty closely. But yeah, please submit your request that way. And it's a great way to get engaged and help steer some of the direction of TrueNAS development going forward.
Absolutely. And in the subject of sort of steering the development and being community focused, so one of the big changes that was community focused, of course, was the switch to Docker. So with this change from Docker, somebody did submit a question. This came from Andrej, emailed to us at the T3 at TrueNAS.com. Thank you for your question. And he asked us, he says, since Electric Eel is replacing Kubernetes with Docker, he says, you know, why was Kubernetes originally chosen in the first place? He says, what were the original reasons, even though it was more complicated, and was Docker considered back then? Sort of, so can you give us, you know, everybody listening as well as Andrej specifically, maybe some background on, you know, why did we go with Kubernetes in the first place? And, you know, what's our sort of path going forward as we embrace Docker here?
Yeah, I think I've told this story probably in bits and pieces throughout forum posts and Reddit posts and all that. You'd have to go piece it together now. But to give you the short version of it, I mean, yeah, we had plans when we first embarked on the Scale project. Obviously, we were doing Gluster at the time, and I don't think I have to repeat all the history of how Gluster didn't turn out the way we had hoped. That was kind of a shame. But at the same time, the idea was you'd be pairing something like Kubernetes with Gluster, and it made a lot of sense. And maybe we'd be doing clustered apps down the road. It was more of a long-term thing. But as we got into it and started implementing Kubernetes, we very quickly realized there's a lot of challenges with Kubernetes. It's really designed for a specific type of customer in mind. And we're talking big cloud hosting guys. I mean, granted, you can run it in your lab, sure. Absolutely. You can do all kinds of complicated things in your lab. But it really, you know, its niche and what it's best at is for running cloud infrastructure. And with that came a cost in complexity, in performance, all these things that make it not appeal so well to most of our TrueNAS community, which are running, you know, one TrueNAS or maybe two TrueNASs at most in their home or home lab environment and doesn't need all the additional complexity and frankly, headache that Kubernetes brings with it, especially if you're not leveraging it for those benefits. So it was one of those things where we're always open to feedback and freely able to say, yeah, we should do something a little different that better serves our users and customers. And so pretty much, I think from Angelfish on, we started getting requests for, why can't you do Docker? We should just do Docker. Let's do Docker. And for a brief window, we had Docker in the system there. It was actually the backend driver for Kubernetes. And some people were using that manually, even though it wasn't supported at the time.
That maybe was the early sort of bellwether to go. People are really demanding Docker if they're willing
absolutely.
To end run your entire UI just to get to it.
Just to get to it. Because people just know Docker. It's kind of an industry standard. It's very easy muscle memory to keep and have. And I use it. It's pretty wonderful, honestly. It's very simple to understand. And for my home lab, it's the right size for what I need, right? So early this year, we started having more serious conversations about, okay, we should get serious about this. This is the number one thing people are asking for. Every time this comes up, it's like, when can I get Docker? I'd love to just have Docker and Docker Compose specifically. So we made a call and said, yeah, it's absolutely time. Let's go ahead and make the change. Let's do the migration. Yes, we know it causes some churn. And, you know, we apologize for anybody who did hit churn as part of the migration. but the end result has just been so much better, and we're seeing it in the feedback and electric yield. So it was absolutely the right call, and we made a choice to prioritize that above a bunch of other potential things we could have done, because that was just, again, the number one thing people have been asking for a couple of years now. So glad we did it. Glad that's behind us. Now there's definitely stuff we want to improve with the Docker implementation. Don't get me wrong. That's what we were able to do in a 6-month release cycle. So you'll see it improve, of course, over the coming years. But we're glad to have made this important first step.
Yeah, we see your asks on the forum and Discord. We see you talking about the custom apps, the YAML editing, the icons. I think maybe there is an option where we can assign custom icons. We'll have to dig into that one a little bit.
If not, make a feature request, because maybe that's something we can add.
Feature requests on the forum. That seems like it would be relatively low risk to let us change an image in there. But yeah, those kind of things, again, make feature requests, bring up your feedback to us. That's what we want to hear. And, you know, the Docker was sort of a community-driven feature to begin with. So, you know, continue driving the direction of TrueNAS sort of in the way you want to see it go.
So appreciate the question, Andre. That's awesome. You got the honor of the first question on our podcast. So that's awesome. We need to get you a special badge or something made. But hey, you can be on the podcast too. If you have specific questions, again, t3@truenas.com. Send them our way. We'd love to answer them in a future week's episode. And I guess any other closing thoughts before we wrap up today, Chris?
Well, I think I have a couple more systems hanging around behind me here that probably need an upgrade to electric eels. So I need to bump those 15,000 numbers a little bit higher.
Go for it. Yeah, I'm already itching to go ahead and upgrade to the nightly for Fangtooth myself. But that's what I get to do. That's part of my day job. So looking forward to it. But again, thank you for watching, everybody. We're looking forward to being back again next week and interacting with you on the forums and on Reddit and other socials. So keep those questions coming, and happy TrueNASing, everyone.